Hello, everybody. Thank you for watching another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. I'm coming to you from the road in Idaho, and I've got my friend Phil Labonte, the lead singer of All That Remains, on the other end. How you doing tonight, Phil?
I'm doing well, Reed, Mr. Idaho, tonight.
So where are you? This is kind of important. You're not in Texas right now.
This is the New Hampshire house where my house in New Hampshire, which is, I never changed my address or anything. I just added an address when I went to Texas. I was always registered to vote in New Hampshire. So I was never not a citizen of the state of New Hampshire. This is my place in New Hampshire. So,
yeah, I lived out in Denver for like 6 months, and I lived in Arizona for 4 months, and I traveled the whole country for a couple years, and I never changed from New Hampshire until I moved to Utah. And last October, I finally bit the bullet and, you know, got an address in Utah, registered to vote in Utah. It was quite the thing, like, you know, all my whole life,
yeah.
New Hampshire, you know, especially the voting privilege we get there with, you know, being the first primary in the nation.
It was
something to give up for sure.
Yeah, that was like the very first thing I did when I moved to New Hampshire 10 years ago now, or almost 11. I went and I got rid. I went to the post office I went to the DMV and did all the stuff I needed to change my address. Showed up with a proof that I lived in New Hampshire, and was like, check it out. I don't want to pay Massachusetts taxes anymore. It took me, I don't know. It was really, really quick. I feel like it happened. It was within the first couple weeks that I changed my address over and got it, you know, got it official and got my new license and got out of paying Massachusetts state tax and dealing with the crap from Massachusetts.
Yeah. For everyone who's not from New Hampshire, doesn't know New Hampshire very well, they're not very good on drug laws, but they are pretty wild east, I guess, instead of wild west when it comes to, like, you don't have to wear a seatbelt, you don't have to wear a helmet, fireworks, firecrackers, handguns, assault weapons, you know, pretty much everything that blows up or shoots is legal. Tannerite, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, essentially New Hampshire just doesn't have any laws about, I mean, it doesn't have any laws that restrict you from doing things. There's just laws about, like, you can't hurt other people and destroy other people's property. And it's kind of like, those laws are good enough. Those cover the things that you need to have laws for.
Yeah. A lot of people buy stuff in New Hampshire that they can't buy in the other states, like in Maine, pretty sure in Massachusetts and Vermont. I think are fireworks legal in Vermont? I can't even remember.
I think so, but I think, well, no, I don't know. No, they're not.
They're not. No. So New Hampshire's the only one in that area. Everyone comes and buys fireworks on the 4th of July or New Year's or whatever, and then goes back over the border.
Everyone from Massachusetts comes to New Hampshire, and then the cops in Massachusetts are sitting, you know, across the state line in Massachusetts waiting for people to come back. And they literally pull people over, come up with excuses to get into their, you know, to violate the Fourth Amendment and get into their car and search their stuff. And if they find fireworks, the police take those fireworks home. they just take them and steal them from you. They're just like, thank you. Now I'm going to go ahead and take these fireworks, which are illegal, and set them off in my front yard.
I guess that's better than setting them off in your bomb truck like they did in Los Angeles. Did you hear about that this last 4th of July? Did you see that video? The police, LAPD, they seized a bunch of fireworks from this neighborhood, and then they thought it would be a great idea to just put them in their bomb-proof truck and set them all off at once. And I don't think anyone died, but a lot of people, I don't know about a lot of people, but some people got injured. And I saw the video. It was just like a bomb going off. I was just like, this is why you need the government to, you know, handle explosives responsibly. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I suppose you know, they're like, only we're allowed to make the mistakes because, you know, we can't get ourselves in trouble or something. I don't know. I that doesn't make any sense. I know. But I mean, what are you supposed to think? Like the government is just people, you know, and it just because you work for the government doesn't mean you don't do something boneheaded. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, I think we sort of agree on this. We sort of disagree on it, but we've talked about it in the past. Like, you tend to think that people are inherently good if they remember to humanize each other and remember that we're all individuals. I still kind of think that people just suck in general. And that's actually, I'm more of like a J.R.R. Tolkien type of guy where that's the reason I'm so anti-government, so anti-authority, because to me, it's such a confusing concept to think, oh, people need to be governed, so we will govern them with people with a lot of power. And it just seems the more power anyone has, that is the most dangerous thing. That's what corrupts more than a bunch of idiots like making their own stupid decisions and aggressing. Like, I feel like aggression decentralized is just easier to handle and safer. Like, when you centralize aggression, which we've done to an amazing scale, then it becomes uncontrollable and you know, unresistible. And I mean, we have, you know, 2020 and 2021 in the United States and other countries too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I feel like it should be self-evident that when you can distribute power, then you have, you know, limited ability for that power to be corrupted and used against a broad part of society. It's kind of like, you know, limited power, limited reach, then there's a limited amount of damage that can be done. So I think you're right on with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So when we talked the first time, which was a while ago now, I think that was in February or March, like we were talking before this stream started, time has flown. Like, we've known each other almost a year now, because mm-hmm. it was like the beginning of January when we first got in touch with each other. And it's been a crazy year. So much has happened this year.
You know, and you're like, when you first, like when I first was introduced to your Twitter page and stuff and your ideas, you were far less of a Mises Caucus type libertarian, and now you've seen the error of your ways and have gravitated towards the Mises Caucus and the correct libertarian perspective. Which is, you know, it's either Mises Caucus or just pure anarchy.
Yeah, well, I've sort of adopted both of those at the same time. It's been weird, but yeah, I remember, I mean, I've gone back and watched some of my videos from last year before I, you know, even really knew. In 2020, I wasn't even really paying attention to the whole caucus war so much. I mean, I knew it was happening, but I just wasn't really paying attention to it. And I still
agree. Unity guy, like, man, come on, let's come on, man. I'll even hang out with the Lib Socialist Caucus.
Yeah. Well, I think what happened is I just didn't realize how many shit bags there are, you know. Like, it's not so much that I've lost the desire to work with others. It's just, there's been so many people that I've been burned by, and not just like unfriendly interactions. Like, you know, some of it was accusations that were bullshit, and you know, I've been called a Nazi and a Jew hater and like all sorts of stuff by, like, you know, kind of prominent people. And
those kind of attacks, they come uniformly from people that have one type of perspective that is, if you're, and I hate the term woke, but that functionally is the best term that we have, I think. And when you're dealing with people that that have that perspective. Doesn't matter if they're libertarians or, you know, or if they're Democrats or whatever. The woke is first. The libertarian, the Democrat, the Republican, the whatever, the Christian. If you follow James Lindsay, he's been kind of pointing out there's a lot of woke Christians nowadays. Yep. And the woke is first. And to think that the woke is first to a Christian is crazy, but it is, you know, because it's the way that it's been, I guess, spread throughout the church is the woke part is a part and parcel of the teachings of Jesus Christ, apparently. So, you know, it's the woke first. And when you're dealing with that kind of mentality, it doesn't matter what the, you know, what the brand associated with the woke is. The woke is the part that's really the thing that's directing the person, the individual, you know, the ideology that's directing the individual, I think is the best way to say it. So,
yeah, no, I would agree with that. And there were people who were woke that I naively thought we could maybe try to get along with and get past that layer, but you're right. It's the end all be all. It is. It's the entire ideology is whatever it is. Like, I mean, you'll find that a woke libertarian and a woke Democrat are going to be a lot more similar than, you know, a regular libertarian and a woke libertarian, even. Like, they're going to be more different than a woke libertarian and a woke Democrat are.
The woke part will be the part that is the thing that stands out the most.
Yeah. And it's really, I don't know. It's like the most religious form of thought that exists. And a lot of people in the liberty movement over the last several months have been trying to draw sectarian lines between culture and religion and things like that. And I really don't think that, I'm not saying those things don't matter, but I don't think they're the most important thing. I think this is actually one of the most important things. You know, like, you can have people who are agnostic or atheist or non-religious or Christian or Jewish or whatever, and if they're not woke, if they don't demand that you accept their belief system and that you adhere to their values, if they just want you to coexist with them and just leave them alone, those are the types of people that I want to jive with. And yeah. I feel like the conversation has been trying to shift the other way. Like, no, that isn't what matters. What matters is that you believe the same thing. I just really disagree with that. I don't think that is what matters. I think what matters is tolerance and coexistence and, you know, keeping to yourself. If you can't accept somebody else, then don't accept them. Just stay away from them.
Yeah.
Let them do their own thing and be your own person. And, you know, like, and this even goes for undesirable opinions. Like, there's some opinions somebody could have that I think are abhorrent, but as long as you're going to, you know, keep those opinions to yourself, or you don't even need to keep the opinions to yourself. You can say whatever you want, but as long as you're
just not, so long as you don't have the ability to use the government to enforce them.
Exactly.
You know, I think you're right. I think that, there was one of the things that you were saying, that there was a point that I wanted to make and it escapes me now, so I'm not going to harp on it, but I do think you're right. The woke is the first thing. The woke becomes the person's entire, you know, it becomes their religion. And I think that it's the most important thing that's going on right now. And it's not just because of the fact that it's a hot topic or whatever. It's because of the implications of allowing that mindset to be the predominant mindset in the US. You know, it's like, that is a recipe for suspicion, consistently being suspicious of your neighbors and your and people that, that live around, you know, that you you work with and stuff. It there's all kinds of evidence that when that mindset is the predominant mindset, that people can't work together, people can't get along, people are always worried, anxiety, the people, everybody is anxious around each other because nobody's sure if they if the person is being honest anymore, because they're afraid, you know, people are afraid if they if they if they say the wrong thing or say something that's out of that's you know, that's the, that someone takes the wrong way, they can get in trouble for it. Or people, I've heard stories about minorities that are told uncomfortable things by white people and make the, because the white people feel like they're supposed to confess something to them, and it makes the whole relationship awkward and weird. Making race the most important topic in interpersonal interactions is literally the worst thing that I can possibly think of that you could do if you want people to get along and hang out together. Like, I feel like that's just the worst thing you can do. And that's what the you know, the woke people do. And it just, it's, it focuses on it. The it ends up being white liberals that are just making fools of themselves, tripping over themselves, trying to say that, you know, trying to act a certain way when all they have to do is treat people like people, as opposed to like, you know, this color or this minority or this political or this group, you know, this minority group or whatever, you know, the way that people interact in a productive manner is when you treat people like people, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So let me ask you this, having to do with the whole Liberty Unity thing. So there were a couple of us, me and a few other people who, I think we were on neither side. Like, a lot of people think we were coming from the loser brigade side, and anyone who knows me, who's known me for a while, knows that's not who I am. Like, I'm not into the cancel culture, pronoun shit or whatever. Like, I was coming into it neutrally. I was pretty new to the party, and I just saw all this fighting going on after we lost, or obviously we were going to lose in 2020, but it was pretty disappointing how horribly it turned out. And I think I was wrong about how many people were bad actors and how many people probably weren't even really libertarians who were saying they're libertarians, and they've kind of exposed themselves and they're leaving. But I do think that whole Liberty Unity thing was good in a couple ways. One way was it actually really, for the neutral people like myself, it exposed who is open-minded here and who is willing to work together on important issues. And that's obviously been Dave and Tom Woods and, you know, all the Mises Caucus people. They're the ones who are like, yeah, we care about the important issues to everybody, and we'll work with anybody in good faith on expanding liberty. And then the other side just turned into a bunch of fucking retards and, you know, instantly threw me to the wolves because I was associating with people they didn't like or whatever. But then the other thing, I think there was like a lot of animosity between Spike Cohen and the Mises Caucus people, and maybe like Justin Amash and the Mises Caucus people. And I think, you know, Justin and Spike are probably more in the middle, like more where I was at the beginning. And I think a lot of those tensions have disappeared. Like, there's still disagreements, but the animosity between the reasonable libertarians and the Mises Caucus, I think, has disappeared for the most part. Do you see it that way?
Well, I never thought that the Mises Caucus was unreasonable, but you're talking to a guy that didn't, you know, for a long time didn't know that there were libertarians outside of the Mises Caucus.
Like, right.
My experience with libertarianism came from, you know, it was Ron Paul, Tom Woods, and you know, that the Mises Caucus, that Judge Napolitano, those guys were the guys that I was listening to, and for me, the libertarian idea was, or libertarian ideas were never a left-leaning thing. You know, it was always something that was very right-leaning. So the whole identity stuff that goes along with the left nowadays just was something that just wasn't, it didn't occur to me. So mm-hmm. to me, like, Justin didn't seem, I didn't see why people would be hostile to Justin or why people would be hostile to Spike. Aside from, you know, the fact that they were trying to be libertarians that were in, I don't want to use the term inclusive because I don't want it to sound like I'm talking about like woke things, but like they wanted to make sure that libertarians of all types felt welcome in the Libertarian Party. And I think that makes sense. So they didn't come across to me as being against the Mises Caucus. I am aware that the Mises Caucus are about as hardcore libertarian as you can get. But they're still libertarians. It's not like Mises Caucus people are all anarchists. You know what I mean? So, right. So yeah, it never struck me as something that was all that big of a deal. And I didn't understand why the people that had bones to pick with Justin and Spike, in the Mises Caucus, I never understood why they had bones to pick with those guys, because they seemed like they were pretty much right on all the time, you know, with what is thought to be standard libertarian thought.
Yeah, I feel like that's subsided though for the most part, don't you? Like, it seemed like it was really bad at the beginning of the year and it's kind of fizzled out. I mean, there's still disagreements, but it doesn't seem as fiery anymore, I guess.
Do you think that could be just because it's an off election year and that it was just kind of everyone kind of cooling off from what was a very, very intense election and also the year of COVID first hitting and stuff? Do you think that might have had some effect on the way people were acting? Or do you think that I feel like that, you know, that likely was it, the fact that it was an election year.
Yeah, I think that definitely contributed to it. But I mean, I remember, and Twitter's a horrible place to judge people by, but I just remember just incessant attacks about, you know, at Spike Cohen all the time and at Justin Amash from Mises people. And I think especially with Spike, like, that has really changed. And I think that's partly because of Spike. You know, Spike has really, I think his messaging is even better than it was last year. Like, I think he's really,
I feel like he was shackled last year.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like he was the candidate for vice president. I feel like he wasn't allowed to be Spike.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, I think that Joe would have been fine, but Joe, as far as a candidate with a personality, she was a little too reserved, and yeah. You know, she wasn't a very colorful candidate. And I get that.
I also don't think she was really in charge of the messaging of her campaign either, like, from a social media standpoint, at least.
Well, I mean, you know, since the campaign, there's been significant changes in the Libertarian Party, all for the better, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. There are people that are no longer in any way associated with the Libertarian Party in New Hampshire anymore. And I think that that's a very good thing. And the influence of those people hopefully will fade after all of that drama with the whole stuff that happened up here with the Libertarian Party in New Hampshire and stuff. So hopefully, you know, if Spike runs, or I don't know who's actually going to run. I don't know if Dave's actually going to run or whatever. But at the very least, we won't have that influence in the yeah. party anymore. Hopefully the woke libertarianism goes away. Hopefully people can see how dangerous the woke ideology is, especially when you take into account how much influence it has in public schools, which libertarians should be 100% against anyways. So I feel like the argument has been made against the woke ideology in the Libertarian Party. And I feel like the Libertarian Party has, for the most part, rejected it. I know there are always going to be some people that are going to hold on to it, but I think that that for the most part, the average libertarian has kind of rejected that kind of ideology and that thought process, and is more interested in a Mises Caucus style libertarianism.
Yeah,
I think.
It's funny with the Mises Caucus and that whole dynamic. You said you didn't realize libertarians existed outside of the Mises Caucus thing. I didn't realize there were libertarians in the Libertarian Party who weren't libertarian. Like I was a Rand Paul guy, and you know,
yeah,
because of that I ended up being a Ron Paul fan before I ever even voted. And then I voted for Gary Johnson, wasn't super impressed by it, but I never was like drawing a line between either of them for some reason. I was just like, well, it's libertarian, so it's all libertarianism, and I don't really care. And then when I actually joined the party last year, I started, you know, finding people who hated Ron Paul or who hated John Stossel or who hated Gary Johnson, like either way. And I was just like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, I didn't even realize any of this was happening.
It makes perfect sense to be angry with Gary Johnson. I don't understand why people would hate Gary Johnson though.
Well, I actually do understand why people would hate Gary Johnson now, but I didn't realize that this animosity between two sides of libertarianism was a thing until I like actually got into the Libertarian Party. And then as you know, the year goes on, I'm finding out like, oh wow, people really hate each other in here. That was just a novel concept to me. But
all you have to do is ask a libertarian if they believe, or if their desire, if they want liberty or liberation. Mm-hmm. If they want liberation, then they're a Marxist. And they're a leftist, and they're not a libertarian. If they want liberty, then they're a libertarian. Liberation is one of those terms that people on the left use in a way where it never arrives. Like, you're never actually liberated. I want liberation, you know, but then you never actually get liberated. Just like they want a revolution, but the revolution never ends. There, it's just an ongoing forever revolution. You know, right. It's just like, you know, the socialist state never achieves communism. It's always just a growing socialist state. The state never actually dissolves away because it's become redundant, like the Marxists said. It would, you know, it never happens. So that's the way to tell. If they want liberty, then they're a libertarian. If they want liberation, then they're just a Marxist.
Yeah.
Or some such neo-Marxist or something like that.
Yeah, and I think those two sides have been kind of distinguished, at least for me, over the last year. So I'm glad I figured this out in an off year, actually. You know, I'm glad this whole process has been in this time, not like when we're running a competitive campaign that actually matters. Because at this point, I kind of feel like last year's campaign didn't really matter. I mean, it was just and, you know, some of that a lot of that I don't really think depended on having a good candidate. I think last year was so, you know, so propagandistic and so heavily influenced by the corporate media that, you know, this is the most important election ever. They do that every year, but last year it was crazy and people were freaking out because they'd lost their jobs, they were locked in their houses. And so to them, it really was like, holy shit, if Donald Trump doesn't win, we're going to enter a communist state. And then for a lot of Democrats, I guess it was like, oh my God, all this police brutality everywhere. If Trump wins again, he's going to, you know, pull out the Insurrection Act and turn us into a, whatever. Like, you know, that's how people were thinking. So I think the possibility of success for a libertarian candidate was pretty low anyways, you know, regardless of how well they did. And that's not to excuse any mistakes that were made. It's just, I think it was not going to end up being a successful year anyway, in hindsight.
I think you might be right. Well, I it depends on what you're talking about, or what your goal, what your metric for success is. If your metric for success is a libertarian winning the office of the presidency, I agree with you. It is not. It was not going to happen last time. If your goal for success is something along the lines of getting, you know, enough where getting enough of the vote where the libertarian candidate had to get, you know, had to get, would be put on stage with the Democrat and Republican candidate, and we actually had a legitimate third party in the debates and all of the other things that inhibit libertarians or other parties from getting the same kind of focus that Republicans and Democrats do. If getting the enough votes to kind of make those issues go away was your metric of success, I think last year was probably the biggest opportunity ever, because nobody gave a crap about Biden. He barely even went out and campaigned. And you know, Donald Trump's, the people that were going to vote for Donald Trump, I think, were baked in, you know. So, but
I think it was just a really
hindsight and stuff. So I don't
know. I think it was a really defensive year. You know, like I actually think 2016 was a better opportunity because it was an offensive year.
Yeah.
And there's no incumbent, where
which is why it's perfectly fine to be angry with
Gary
Johnson. So
yeah, exactly. And I've been angry with him for a while. I was angry at him in 2016, but yeah, I mean, when you have people getting to the point where it's like, oh my God, if Trump doesn't win again, I might never have a job again, or these crazy people are going to take over my state, or, you know, just when you have that hyper partisan, terrified thought, you know, just taking hold of the country, I don't think that rationality and new ideas and, you know, taking risks are really on anybody's minds. Where in 2016, it's like, holy shit, these people both are horrible. And, you know, the economy's not doing amazing, and there's other stuff that we'd like to see improve, but it's not like your city's on fire and you lost your job and you're bracing the door wondering what's going to happen next. I guess,
and
that's
a pandemic, and yeah, I get it. Yeah, totally. Yeah. totally. So I mean, that makes sense. And I do agree, 2016 was an opportunity that was it was missed. We'll say yes. That it was a missed opportunity, unfortunately. What yeah, are you gonna so do, you know? It sucks, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, well, putting the Libertarian Party stuff aside, you know, I've actually I'm going back to New Hampshire for a week next week for Thanksgiving, and I had some family that was going to be in the area. And I did a live stream about this, talk to you about it too. Yeah. Vaccination is actually becoming a personal thing now that you have to care about with family. And I am understanding of that. I really am. Like my boss right now is in the hospital, or he might be out now, but he's been in for 3 weeks. If he is out, he just got out today, and he had a collapsed lung. He had a chest tube put in. So COVID? I mean, I realized, what's that?
From COVID?
Yeah, from COVID. Yeah. And you know, he was a decently healthy person, at least from how well I knew him. And you know, I've got friends who have relatives who've died from it and everything, so I get it. Like, it's no joke and it's serious, but I don't think that there's any you know, there's no reason or rhyme to how people are reacting. I mean, if you asked Democrats, how many people, like what percentage of the population do you think is dying from COVID? A lot of them would probably think it's around 5-10% when it's like a tiny, tiny part of 1% who are dying from it. And then if you ask them, what percent chance do you think you'll be hospitalized from COVID without a vaccine? I think I saw on Bill Maher's show, they ran a poll and it was like most Democrats thought it was like a 50% chance you get hospitalized, where it's around 1% chance you get hospitalized without a vaccine. So there is science denial, I guess, if you want to call it that. We'll just use that term. There is that on the right, you know, like saying that, you know, that that the virus doesn't exist, or, you know, they're making crazy claims about the vaccines, like their fetuses ground up and put in the vial or whatever crazy shit.
Yeah.
But you have that on the left too, you know, the science denial, just the lack of sticking to the facts. And I had family members that I wanted to see who, they said, sorry, we're only seeing double vaxxed people right now.
Oh, Jesus.
And I, the thing that annoyed me was they decided to throw in some political jabs and medical opinions about how irresponsible and kooky I was being. So I actually did clap back at them. And I said, you know what? Actually, I have looked into this and I do know my statistics pretty well. And this is why I have made the decision I've made. And there was no response they could really give. They actually ended up backpedaling after I sent them the, you know, the receipts and the statistics and everything. Yeah. And they even admitted, like, okay, we're not acting that rationally. Like, we are kind of worried and scared about this. So, you know, our decisions might not make the most sense. And it's like, all right, fine. You know, if you're scared and you want to be extra careful, that is totally within your right, regardless of what I think about it. You know, you are allowed to do whatever you want. If you demand that you know what my vaccination status is for me to be in your vicinity, okay, I guess you have a right to do that. Just like I hope you admit I have a right to, you know, vaccinate myself how I see fit. But it's just crazy, man. Just the lack of research, the lack of critical thought, the lack of level-headedness. I've lost faith, not in, you know, not in the American public. I don't know if I ever had any faith in the American public, but
no, you probably didn't.
I've lost a lot of respect for individuals that I knew that I really held in, you know, in high standards. And that's just been really hard to watch. But have you witnessed any of that type of stuff in your personal life or friends, you know, or anything like that?
No, I mean, I see people being silly, about COVID. I'm not going to name any names, but you know, sure, people wearing masks in situations where there's no reason for them to wear a mask, wearing masks as if the mask is going to protect them, when everybody knows that the reason for masks, if there is a reason, if you believe that it's legitimate, which it's supposed to be, like, it's supposed to give you like an edge, like 10% chance, less chance of spreading or catching COVID if you wear a cloth mask or something like that, something small. But even still, that's only so that way you don't give it to someone else. It's not to prevent you from getting it. And yet there are people that I know that, you know, they're wearing masks all the time and you know, doing the whole mask in the car thing alone and whatever, that kind of stuff. And well, I know people that
has COVID, you don't want to catch it.
I know, you know, it could get in your, I hear that it can live in the air filter in your car. And it'll just pump it in through the whole AC system. Yeah. You know, and there are people that I know that, you know, like, were making remarks about people that are not vaccinated. And then those same people that I know that were making remarks about people that were not vaccinated contract COVID after they're vaccinated. And so it's just like, you know, that I don't get into the business of getting into other people's business about their vaccination status.
Right.
I don't worry about it. I got vaccinated. I don't worry about if people know that I got vaccinated. I'm probably not going to get a booster because I don't think that it's necessary. Yet, you know, it's like, if I understand correctly, the vaccination takes the edge off of COVID. If you get it again, or if you, I mean, if you get it, it's not so bad, apparently. And then once you've had it, apparently the natural immunity that you get from it is actually better than the vaccinations. Yeah. And this is all hearsay. I'm not saying anything definitive. So if there's anyone out there going to go and say, well, Phil said this, I'm only telling you what I've heard. I don't make a claim to know anything. And that's all that kind of anyone else, and that's all that anyone can do. So you just do the best with what information you have and don't be awful to other people that make a different, you know, judgment about their health. And if there were more of that, I think it would be less of an issue, but there is not more of that. And I think that's largely because of the media and because of the government.
Yeah. And this is just like what I was saying earlier with the push for sectarianism. To me, it's not between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. It's between the people who are shitty about whatever decision you make. And it does exist to a lesser extent on the other side, too. I mean, There are people who call you a sellout or, you know, that you're not really. If you're someone who got vaccinated, but you oppose mandates, then you're a faker. You know, I hear that stuff too. It's much less than the opposition, but that's the wrong battle to be having. There shouldn't be a culture war over whether or not you're vaccinated. You know, there should be just this personal choice philosophy of, you know, if you got vaccinated, that's your choice. And if you didn't, that's yours. And I'm not even hardlined against getting it. I mean, I made a statement earlier this summer saying I wasn't getting it in the summer because to me, it was pretty much a wash in my, you know, at my age with my health.
Sure.
It didn't really boost my chances of not getting sick by very much or not getting hospitalized or dying or anything. And there's also been this massive media push and government push to get everyone vaccinated. So to me, it was like, no, you know, I'm going to stand with people who aren't doing it because to me, it doesn't put me in any more danger statistically really by much. And it, you know, it's something that I can do that won't threaten my job. So I'm going to stand with these people against getting it. But it's not something that I'm hardlined against ever getting. I mean, in the future, you know, who knows, the disease could keep mutating and getting worse because the Delta variant is a little bit worse than the first round. You know, more able-bodied people have gotten sick from it this time around than last time. So I don't know. There's a possibility I would get vaccinated eventually, you know, but I probably wouldn't really tell anybody. And I certainly wouldn't be asking people what their status was in order for them to hang around with me. You know, I remember when people were first getting them at the beginning of the year, they were like posting on Facebook with their, you know, holding up their receipt and, you know, I saw couples holding them together and it was like,
you know,
it's so weird.
It's just so cringy. And that, and then it just makes me think of the people that, you know, got like tattoos of like the brand that of fucking
Pfizer
and God. Fucking come on, you weirdos. I mean, it's just weird. It's just weird. And I agree with you, you know, just the only legitimate culture war part of this is the mandate part,
right?
You know, like whether or not the government should be telling you that you must do this to function in society and participate in society, considering the actual ramifications of not getting a COVID vaccine. I don't think the government has any business mandating this. I saw today that OSHA has decided they're not going to do it. They're going to listen to the court and not, you know, go through with the mandate. And that's good.
Which is not an excuse to not get rid of OSHA, by the way, that even though they were right about this.
Of course not. Of course not. You know, like that goes without saying, but, right. But yeah, so it's like, that's good. And hopefully that's the way things remain. The government has no business mandating that you do something like that. And I feel like, you know, I don't know the reason. I don't know, like, there's people out there that are really wild about why, you know, about the reason they believe the government wants to get kids vaccinated and everybody vaccinated and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know what the reason is. I don't think that the vaccination is actually going to, like, kill you in, you know, a year and a half. I don't think that it's going to sterilize people. I don't think that any of that stuff is going to happen. So I don't know, and I don't know what the reason would be that the government really wants to get everybody vaccinated. But if you can transmit it when you've been vaccinated, and you can still get sick when you've been vaccinated, and the vast majority of people that get sick don't have any significant issue if they've been vaccinated, and considering how remote the chances are of a significant negative reaction, I don't know why they are pushing so hard for it. I just don't. It doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, I don't know.
It seems to me to be a corporatist scam to sell as many of them as they can. You know,
maybe they spent so much money developing it that the government had to be, you know, had to tell these companies, like, look, we'll just develop it and we'll make sure that you don't lose your shirt on it. And we'll guarantee that people get it and buy it. And we'll buy a, you know, X amount of what, you know, of doses from you. And we promise you won't, you know, lose a boatload of money.
I still know a lot of people who, even though what you just said about the vaccine is true, that it does not give you immunity. It just, you know, helps with the symptoms. It's basically like taking Theraflu. So taking Theraflu doesn't make it so you can't spread the cold or can't get the cold anymore. It just, you know, makes the symptoms more manageable. But I do still know a lot of people who are like, I just wish everyone would get vaccinated so we could get this over with. I'm just that's not how it works. That's like, no, even what I find interesting is the CDC, at least for the most part, they're not straight out lying. Like, if you go on their website, they've got the statistics that I use to justify why I haven't gotten vaccinated. Those are CDC statistics. It's not like I had to find them on some hidden website somewhere. Like, if you go on the website, they will tell you that you should get vaccinated if you're over 5 years old. But then if you look at their stats, they're not giving you information that makes you think, holy shit, if I don't get this, I'll die. It's just that the media is giving the statistics in a very deceitful way. So, for instance, you know, even myself, like, if I get vaccinated, I have about 1/90th of the chance I do now of getting hospitalized. That is true, but it's from 0.9% to 0.01%. So when you hear, like, I'm 90 times more likely to get hospitalized without getting vaccinated, the instant thought is like, whoa, what the fuck? Why don't you go get it right now? Why aren't you running? And then you say, but hold on, That's from 0.9% out of 100 to 0.01% out of 100. That's a very different story, you know? Yeah. And then they also say things like it slows the spread, which is technically true because you have fewer people coughing all the time and spitting and sneezing because their symptoms are lowered. So sure, it slows the spread, but it does not give you immunity. It doesn't protect you from contracting it or from transmitting it. So yeah, they're very clever, which is impressive for the government, I think, at how they word all of this. You know, like, they're not bald-faced lying. They're just being very deceptive in how they form everything. But if you go and you look at their website and you look at the statistics, you can formulate the truth. Like, you can get it if you're just going in there and looking at numbers.
the people that are the most deceitful and the most wrong, the most deceitful, the most incorrect, are the media. Like, the government, even though, especially when it comes to COVID, like, even though, like, there's plenty of room to criticize the government hasn't really, like, provided terrible information in the past year. Like, the first 7-8 months of COVID, the government was a mess, right? Like, no one knew anything. In the past year, the government hasn't had terrible information. They've had to update it a couple times, and that's kind of put egg on their face. But otherwise, the government hasn't had terrible information. It's been mostly the media spreading bad information, inaccurate information, old information. And so it just seems like the media, you know, is either trying to lie or just has no idea what they're doing, which I still kind of think that it's a mixture of both.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know,
but the media is the bad guy. The media is the bad guy. As much as I don't want to say that the government is the good guy, in this case, the media is the bad guy. Fauci's probably a piece of garbage, but, like, otherwise, like, the government's kind of trying to do, because the government doesn't want to kill off Americans. I don't believe that. Like, I know that there are people out there that are like, oh, you know, Bilderberg, and there's only going to be 500,000 human beings on Earth. Well, I don't think that's true, but I do think that the government is full of idiots, not so many malicious people. But
yeah, and I'll agree with you. It's an overlap. It's both, you know, and ignorance is very conducive to evil, and, you know, stupidity is very, you know, allows evil to flourish for sure. But
sure.
The other thing is, you know, the response that you're talking about that people have, that, you know, they're trying to kill all of us, and there's only going to be a few hundred thousand of us left, and this is genocide. Like, you can't really blame people for thinking that after last year and a half with everything the media has done. So, you know, it's easy to blame the ill-informed neighbor you have who's spouting nonsense. But, you know, ultimately, I do blame this on the misinformation coming from the people who are supposed to be responsible and supposed to be telling us the truth and supposed to be informing us, and they have failed. And so, of course, you're going to have crazy conspiracies come up. Like, what do you expect, you know?
Yeah. You know, when I say that, you know, Bilderberg's not looking to kill off everybody except for 500,000 people, doesn't mean that, like, the governments of the world aren't basically getting together and saying, well, we'll just, you know, come to agreements on most things and kind of just have a one world unelected government, whether people kind of want it or not, right? Like, even though it's probably not officially a one world government, and countries can go ahead and just say, you know, screw off and take your resolution and shove it up your butt. I mean, look at Israel does that a lot. They get a lot of resolutions against them, and they just go ahead and ignore them. And to be honest with you, as much as I know there's a lot of people that are listening to this that will criticize Israel or want to criticize Israel, I do kind of think it's awesome that Israel looks at the UN and says, because that's what I want America to do. I want America to just go ahead and tell the UN to go fuck off. So you kind of got to give it to Israel for that. But like, you know, the idea of a one world government, I don't think that it's going to be, I don't think that it's going to be super obvious. I think they're just going to kind of, or they will attempt to create a one world government, and non-governmental organizations will be installed into power, or positions of power without the approval of the populations, of the countries of the world. I think that's the attempt, but I don't think there's going to be any kind of official, oh, check it out. You know, now we just are all one government. I think that it's going to be, you know, you'll have a facade of sovereignty of sovereign states. I think the UN is, or the European Union is probably the model. And that's why people were so shocked when the UK was like, see ya, you know, when they left that it actually, Brexit actually happened. So I think I do think that there is an attempt to make that a reality. But I just don't think that they want to do it and then kill off, you know, 6.5 billion people. I think they just want to have 7 billion people that are all under one kind of world government.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the last thing I want to talk about is, you know, there's this idea that the only way to fight insanity is with insanity, you know, like feed into that conspiracy, feed into that, hysteria. I think there's a difference between capturing it and feeding into it. You know, like you can find someone who's really horrified by what's going on and be like, hey, you should be horrified about this, and this is why, try to steer them in the right direction. But there are a lot of people who think we should just, you know, keep feeding the frenzy and keep feeding the, you know, the insanity, and that's actually, we can use it to weaponize those people against what's happening. I don't think that's as effective, and I think you actually turn off a lot more people doing that, because you have, I still think, you know, I don't think most people are smart, but I think most people are not, you know, hyper, I'm trying to think of the right word. They're not like extremely aggressive and hyped up on some sort of political energy. Like, I think most of them are kind of confused and wondering what's going on. So if you have a whole side that is just spouting nonsense and is just, you know, saying crazy things against what is happening, I think that actually gives more ammo to the other side. I think the right thing to do is try to capture that frustration and anger and steer people toward the truth. And even if the truth isn't as exciting or isn't as, you know, I don't know, isn't as electric or whatever, the truth is the truth, and that's what we should be telling people, and that's ultimately what's going to expose the people who are lying. I don't think like fighting craziness with craziness is the right answer, I guess.
I think you're right to a certain degree. But at the same time, I don't have a personal attachment to any one theory or method as to the best way to fight back against authoritarian impulses or authoritarian government or whatever. So whatever wins is what I think is the best course of action. And I even would go so far as to say that generally, I want to say principles matter, right? Generally, I think that is important. But I think that when you're going up against people that don't care about the truth or don't care about reality, then you can't limit yourself to to being ideological. You know, whatever wins is what you want to do. Like, if you look at the thing that's making me think this is the Kyle Rittenhouse situation. Like, the argument against Kyle, the state argument, is literally just a fabrication, right? Like, your average person that doesn't know much about the Kyle Rittenhouse case, that thinks that Kyle Rittenhouse should go to jail, thinks that he killed two black people. Like, they don't know. They have no idea. And that's something that your average leftist kind of, you know, they kind of live in an alternate universe,
right?
Frequently. So, and that's how they're, that's how they win, is because they, it doesn't matter what the truth is. They just use whatever narrative is the most effective. And I think that that really is what the liberty movement needs to do. Win at all costs, because losing is completely unacceptable. Losing is, you know, tyranny and civil war and violence and all kinds of things that are terrible. And losing is like a lot more of last summer, you know, all the time, riots all the time, a justice system that does not work at all for anyone. And, you know, you can't trust a jury to come to the right conclusion or to actually find people, you know, based on evidence, that they're going to be intimidated by the mob outside and by protests and stuff like that. So, I think whatever is necessary to win is what must be done, because, you know, to lose is to lose to tyranny and possibly not have the means to get out of it for a lot of years, for decades. You know, it took 70 some years for the Russians to get out of the Soviet Union, and they were given not much better, because they didn't, you know, they were given after the fall of communism, then they have the massive oligarchy and a basically a dictator, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think sectarianism is such a bad idea, like trying to divide people on even more things.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, I mean, this kind of comes back to the liberty unity idea in the beginning. Like, I think we've realized, or I, you know, you probably already knew this, but, you know, I've realized there are a lot of people that are not, it's not that they disagree on some things, it's they're not in the same fight. They're not worried about the same things. But I am, you know, I'm for everybody who does care about this, you know, whether you're right or left or Republican or Democrat or libertarian. Like, if you are against tyranny, you're on my side. Even we can disagree about minutia, figure that out later, but if you're against what's going on right now, I'll consider you a friend.
Yeah. And that was the thing that struck me is when, you know, when I first became aware of your Twitter page and stuff, the fact that you were like, you were actively looking to find people to bring together, you know, the Libertarian Party has some strong divides in it, and there are too many people that focus on those divides. And so the fact that you were like, oh, if you're looking to increase individual liberty, then I want to work with you. And I'm like, there you go. That's all that's what the Libertarian Party should be focused on. It shouldn't be focused on liberation. It shouldn't be focused on liberating groups. It should be focused on maximizing individual liberty.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. That is, that's been the goal, and that hasn't changed. Where can people keep up with you? What do you got going on? Anything coming up? Or
I am Phil That Remains on Twitter. You can support me on Patreon, patreon.com/PhilThatRemains. I post all stuff that I do, podcasts. I will be posting a bunch of behind the scenes stuff from the record that we're working on currently. The band In case you don't know, I'm in a band called All That Remains, allthatremainsonline.com. We're working on a new record right now. It'll be out next year sometime. We've got a tour planned to celebrate an anniversary of a record called The Fall of Ideals, that the tour starts in March. So we've got a lot of things going on. I stream on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/allthatremains and twitch.tv/fillthatremains. Check me out there. We're all over the internet.
Yeah, and everybody, I've posted all the links. I'm in the description for where you can follow me. I've also got Phil's Twitter page on there. But follow me on all those places, because I lost my first Twitter account and I realized I kind of put too many eggs in one basket there. Make sure you follow me on Instagram, Facebook, Odyssey, YouTube, obviously. Follow me everywhere, because you never know when they're going to kick you off. I am back on Twitter. I'm at Naturalist Cap.
You never know when Reed's going to test the waters. What can I get away with?
Yeah. That's a more accurate way to describe it. You're right. It's not like I'm just an innocent passerby that they decide to snipe. There's a reason they go after me. So, but thanks for coming on, Phil. That was great. We'll have you back on again soon.
Awesome, man. Good to talk to you.